Finance and Budget.
Thank you.
Regent Brody.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of hard act to follow here.
I was going to say, Chair, we should demand we not follow that.
I thought maybe you could do a presentation.
I know.
We can sit as the first item at our committee meeting, but we're going to expand today a little bit. The request is for the approval of faculty and staff personnel actions which have been approved through the administrative channels and executed through Human Resources Information System for the period January 1-24 through 2/29/24. This also includes the individuals we considered for tenure and promotion.
Regent Brody, thank you very much for the opportunity to call attention to what you're approving today. Not only are you approving raises and payments, you're also approving granting tenure and promotion, and you have a list of the faculty members who are being promoted to associate professor, who are being granted tenure from assistant to associate professor, and then those who are being promoted from associate to full, and a range of other activities within that list. But I wanted to talk about tenure just for a moment and how important that is to our institution. What it means in the academy, and you will recall about 2 years ago, I said we were going to do tenure offers and approval differently. Some thought that meant I was changing the tenure process. That's not what I meant. But what I did mean is we were going to pay attention to and celebrate your decision to grant tenure to this list of individuals. So tenure is such a crucial part of what we do as an institution. It protects faculty to be able to explore work and do things that otherwise they might be uncomfortable exploring. That's important for the future, not just of our university or for universities. It's important for the future of our nation, for us to be able to take chances as an academic body, to be able to address grand challenges that otherwise might not be addressed, and to do work that some might find difficult, but is protected by academic freedom. And so I just want to dispel, tenure is not a job for life. It doesn't mean you can't be fired. But what it does mean is you have the capacity and the protection to explore things that are difficult, to speak your mind on issues related to your discipline in a way that some might find objectionable. And what we should do as a university, the same way we celebrate freedom of speech and freedom of expression, is also celebrate academic freedom and the tenure that protects it. So that's an important moment for our university and for all of the people on this list. I want to offer all of them my sincere congratulations and compliment them on their efforts.
Thank you. So I would just like to add, in understanding how people get to this list of tenure, and understanding that process. And when he talks about it's not just a job for life, this process starts with tenured faculty in the department making the recommendation that people get tenured. And think about what that means. It means that people are saying, this person that we want to promote has passed our judgment as somebody that we think we can continue to work with. We're not going to do that for someone who's going to not take teaching seriously at this institution. We're not going to do that for someone who's not doing research or creative arts or not participating in some way in the community. Somehow or another, they're contributing in a way that makes your most cynical faculty say, I want this person as a colleague, and we're letting them in. And it's not, we're certainly not going to give someone a job for life that we believe is going to slide down the cliff of laziness and not participate in the future, because that only creates work for us. So as I look around the room today, I see Dr. Chris Pelosi is in the corner over here, an economics professor who's being promoted, and Dan Clark over here as a math professor who's being promoted, and Mariah Yates in the second row over here as a management professor being promoted to that tenure and promotion. Or is there anyone else in the room that I might have missed? So just to recognize these three individuals as standing in for this entire group, And understanding the amount of work that it takes and the tremendous accomplishment that it is. And just one quick story. I was told recently by someone, They will recognize the story. After this meeting, this was a tradition that Dean Katz had. He would go and tell the people in the college, go to their office and congratulate them on it. And this person talked about calling their spouse and crying over getting that particular accomplishment, because it is a tremendous accomplishment that reflects both the career of work and looking forward to the things that can be accomplished in the future. So I appreciate the list being in here, taking the moment for the board to understand how important this is to these people and the vote that we're taking.
Now, Ed, we now celebrate in the fall semester when everyone returns to campus, everyone who has been promoted and granted tenure with a spouse, a partner, or friend, or supporter at the president's residence. And it's a wonderful celebration of the 7 years it takes to get tenure and the multiple years it takes after that.
Very well said. Thank you. This whole matter was poetically expressed over a century ago, and I love saying it because it has to do with my alma mater, but create an environment where you can ever encourage that fearless and continual sifting and winnowing by which alone the truth may be found. And that's really what we as a board need to be doing. This is a mechanism.
I think it's important to note, too, based on what Shane has just told us, that we recognize also what this means is that your peers approve of you. And those are the ones that probably know you the best, know whether you're doing your job the best or not. But when your peers recommend you for any honor, tenure, or anything else, then that means that you have an approval stamp from them, which I think is critical and very, very important in this context.
I'd just like to say congratulations to the individuals here that are going to be tenured and absolutely all the other ones on the list.
Yeah.
Any other questions or comments before we call for vote? Good? All right, I'd entertain a motion and that we approve the faculty and staff personnel actions.
So moved.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Susan, I will let you take the statement of revenues and expenditures.
So, thank you. So this will be the third quarter statements of revenues and expenses, and we'll go over the revenue first and the expenses second, but I want to say the third quarter continues to look good. I also want to say that before I get into the details, that we are continuing to monitor monthly our expenses and our revenue across campus, and we had a really good month in March, and so the expectation is that we will continue to see improvement. As a matter of fact, Ray Rinaldo yesterday was the Lord, I guess a couple of days ago was the last day of the month, so we'll be looking forward to April results soon. So this is what our revenue looked like for the third quarter, and you'll see that revenue was 86% of the total budget as compared to 83% in the prior year. So that is an increase of $9.9 million or a 3.5% increase over the prior year. So overall, that looks, that is a good story. So kind of drilling down into the revenue overall, looking at net tuition revenue, and this is an important and notable note that our net tuition revenue did increase by $2 million, and that is directly related to the increase in our freshman class and our overall retention rate improvements. And tuition revenue was 95% of the budget as compared to 90% the prior year. The other revenues, as we talked about earlier, state appropriation is lower, primarily due to decline in performance funding. As we've talked about before, it's difficult for us to compete with the research institutions. So grants and contracts are higher, primarily related to the increase in the Pell and CAP grant program and the KIA Innovative Scholarship Policy program for our refugees. Other revenue is trending higher again because of when we put in our new investment policy and signing our new banking contract. So before I go into expenses, any questions on the revenue side? Okay. Looking at our expenses, looking at personnel, it's basically trending as we expect it within the budget. It's higher than the prior year related to two factors, the overall 2% salary increase pool that we had in the budget, and also as deans and vice presidents begin to fill some of the vacant positions. So we're slightly over last year again because of the salary increase and the filling of vacancies, 73% this year to 70% last year. And then our direct expenses, again, as we saw on the revenue side, with the grants and contracts being higher, you'll see that directly offset on the expenditure side. And back to the continual monitoring. I think we've done a really great job as campus, given the inflation that we all feel personally. The deans and vice presidents have done a really, really, and I've got to say the faculty and staff as well. Everybody's done a good job keeping our expenses within what we set our target at. So you'll see if you look at some of the categories, travel is down from 112% of budget last year down to 95% of budget. And most of your travel is pretty much complete at this point with the semester ending. Utilities is really great, and we have to thank Mother Nature for that. But our utility budget, even with inflation, was 70% of budget at this time last year, is at 65%. Percent of budget. And then maintenance, again, with the inflationary cost, we've been able to get that down as well from 109 down to 108. So that's all I have on the third quarter revenue versus expenditure.
If I could add to Susan's report, I also want to thank and commend the work of deans and vice presidents, their budget analysts who are learning as we go about how important it is on a day-to-day basis to monitor and to track in a decentralized budget model. And I also want to thank all of our faculty and all of our staff who've been diligent about making sure dollars that are spent on things that are institutional priorities, and that we're going to be conservative as an institution so that where we find ourselves is different than where some other places may find themselves in the coming years. It is uncomfortable sometimes to say no as a leader because we're going to pick what we're going to do. But it's necessary for us to make sure that every dollar is attached to a strategic priority and an area of growth. And we also have conversations around what are the things that we're going to stop doing so that we can redeploy those scarce resources internally. So I want to thank the entire university community for challenging conversations sometimes, but I think if you look, we managed to travel a little bit less than last year, but we still spent almost $7 million on travel. So it's not that we just stopped traveling, we just asked harder questions about, is this necessary? And so I'm thankful for everyone who's been part of that. I'm looking back at the deans, because I know how tough that is, particularly when faculty are asking questions and you have to answer them. So thank you all.
Susan, I know we're looking at Q3 for approval, but I've got to ask if you have a crystal ball and how cloudy it is on Q4. Q4 is normally the time when it gets really tough for us. We think we're doing fairly well, and then all of a sudden it falls back.
Yeah, and if you look at the past data, you hit the nail on the head. That's when, for whatever reason, universities, and not just us,
sure,
across the board, tend to spend a lot of their money in the fourth quarter. And so, again, we have continual meetings, Bud and I, the president with the deans and vice presidents, and urge us to really, really pay close attention to the fourth quarter.
And so, thank you, Regent Brody, for that. So, to our faculty, staff, and leadership, the work is not done. Please don't go load up on copier paper and to stack in the closet in June. We got to stay disciplined. We got to stay focused, and I'm confident that the choices that we make in the next several months, couple months now, will put us in good stead. And so don't, it's not mad money. Don't blow the budget now.
Well, to go back to something you said over the course of the year, as we were going through this particular somewhat painful process on campus for people to get used to, you warned all along those units that overspent that it would come out of their budget for this next year, and we wouldn't have this university-wide pain. We would have unit pain where units were not able to keep their spending under control. So just keeping that in mind as we go into the fourth quarter, just it seemed might be a helpful thing. So I'm assuming that's still the plan.
Yeah, we have to, as I've said over and over again, we need to budget and spend conservatively. Dollars are scarce in higher education right now. It is easy to lose focus and lose discipline. And what I'm proud of is that just about every unit on campus has been not just incredibly disciplined, but managed to spend under their targets this year. And so, we will see where the class comes in and retention comes in and all the other work that we're doing. But next year will be a conservative budget again, one that, I think will present some opportunities, but we have some work to do still. And I know that's hard for people to hear. The reality is that higher education right now is in a difficult place, not just if you look at the national conversation that's happening this past week around freedom of expression and protest, but also on folks deciding that maybe four-year degrees are not for them, and a declining population base, and the enrollment cliff that comes in the next couple years, and individuals going to college at a lower rate this year than last year in the Commonwealth. All that are the pressures that we think about every single day, and we have to be proactive in addressing them so that we don't wind up in a place that's unimaginable or unbearable.
Any other questions?
Quick question. I wasn't going to ask this, but I can't resist. When we talk about the good performers and the bad performers, there is a category that has shown up at over 100% multiple years in a row. I'm pointing to maintenance. And I don't think it's fair, personally, to single out inflation as an excuse when everybody on this campus, deans, every area, is dealing with same inflationary pressures. Will everyone on this campus in the coming fiscal year have to pay for the bad acts of a division that has continued to overspend beyond their capacity?
I think that what we have to do, and we have a committee that's working on this now, let's take a very close look at that SEDEXO contract. So we have not had a conversation as a board, you have not had a conversation about this in a decade. We have a long-term maintenance contract with an outside vendor called SEDEXO. The purpose of that contract was to take employees that were in a retirement system and move them out of the university into a third party, which freed us from having to participate in that state KERS retirement system. Some of you will remember that we have an escalating contribution to that, an escalator, because we're paying off our debt to the system. When this decision was made, the contribution per employee to retirement was 50% of salary. And conversations several years ago were that would go to 70% of salary. That just was not sustainable for us as an institution. And so we made that decision as a cost-saving measure to outsource. We fixed the retirement issue at the state level. The president's worked really hard with KERS to get us to a place where there's a path forward, and the contribution level is now about 10% into that retirement system. And so what was a cost-saving activity now may not be. And so I think we're going to have a conversation around, and there was a committee that's taking a look at, does this still make good sense to us? Or could you do the same by insourcing, essentially? And we're going to have that conversation during the next months and next year. But David, thank you for raising that. It's absolutely a challenge for us.
I appreciate the answer and the candid nature.
So when is that contract up? Well, I think it's probably about 3 more years, but we always have a clause in all of our contracts that we can give them 30 days notice. So, I mean, we couldn't, as you say, insource in 30 days, but we can certainly take steps. So I did want to recognize Dean Brown, Terrence Brown, is chairing that committee of facilities to look at, the first thing they're looking at is the DEXA contract. We also put together a committee on, because also including that maintenance numbers is our software maintenance. And so we put together a committee on information technology that is being led by Dean Thatcher. And first thing that they're looking at is all the softwares we have across campus. And are we utilizing those properly? Do we need all of them? And because those are skyrocketing as well. So anyway, we've got those two committees and they're underway.
Any other questions or comments? If not, I'd entertain a motion to accept for filing the statement of revenues and expenditures for the 9 months ended March 31, 2024 and 2023.
So moved.
Motion by Regent Brinkley.
Second.
Second by Regent West. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Susan, I'll let you continue with the information items.
Yeah, so we have two information items, the first being the third quarter interim financial statements, and then we'll go into a brief fiscal year 25 budget update. So on the interim financial statements, I just want to go through this again just to kind of remind everyone, because if you looked at the statements, they really don't tell you a whole lot at this point. Chair Brody and I have talked about this because this is the first year we've done them, so we can't present it with a two-year comparison, which is how you would typically present your financial statement. So they're really just standalone statements at this point. But we will have comparative data starting next year, and I think that will provide more insight for the board. It's information only. As we say, no action is taken. Just to remind everyone, the balance sheet is an accumulation of assets over time. Your income statement, on the other hand, is just a current snapshot, and in this case would represent 3/4 of a full fiscal year. And of course, these are unaudited financial statements. The only time our external auditors would come in to do audits would be for the final statements of the year. So this is what your statement of net position, which we commonly refer to as balance sheet, looks like. You'll see all of your total assets are around $623 million. Your deferred outflows of resources, most of that has to do with our pensions, is around $44 million. Your total liabilities are $487 million. Your deferred inflows, which again is another pension item primarily, is about $35 million, and our total net position, again, this is an accumulation over time of $144 million. So you can imagine when I go back to, if we have 2 years worth of comparative, you could see the change over the prior year, which we don't have right now. So this is your statement of revenues, expenses, and changes in net position, and this is your commonly called income statement. So you'll see where our operating revenues are $124 million, operating expenses $260 million, non-operating revenues, that would primarily be your state appropriation and your grants and contracts is $140 million with an increase in net position of $4.3 million. At this point, because we get our actuarial pension adjustments annually from the state. And again, Gary and I have talked about this. We do not make any assumptions at this point about pension until we get the final adjustment at the end of the year. And again, Ronaldo and I were talking, I guess yesterday, there's going to be a GASB release. I don't know if it's for the upcoming probably for the upcoming year, because this is what every university faces, and it drives us finance people crazy, is where you see an operating loss of $136 million. So GASB is going to change that so that you won't show an operating loss all the time, because what it does, it just does, it doesn't factor in your state appropriation or any of your grants and contracts. So hopefully we'll get that. That's one release I actually look forward to, so you don't see that huge operating loss. I don't typically look forward to GASB, that one I do. So any questions on the two statements? Okay. So just briefly on the development of the 25 budget. So just wanted to kind of give you a little bit of update of the work that's been done by the Budget Executive Committee to date. So they began meeting regularly, bi-weekly meetings since September of 23, and they are chaired by Jordan Basham and Dean Murphy. And the BEC received budget updates throughout the whole process from September until now, and these included tracking of enrollments and financial aid, as well as state budget information. And then the committee has made a recommendation into executive leadership that there should be a budgeted salary pool of 2% that would be distributed in the upcoming year. So the final development of this year's budget is delayed a bit because of several factors. The delay in the FAFSA rollout, which we've talked about, which has been a bit of a nightmare for most universities across the nation. And then because of the FAFSA, the delay, we also had to delay the scholarship deadline or to extend the scholarship deadline. The actual scholarship deadline now isn't until the middle of this month. And so because of these issues, and you couple that with also the first year edition of what we call the Common App, we really don't have final revenue numbers to give the board at this time. So the one thing I would like to announce is that the BEC, and I'm sure President Caboni might want to speak to this, but the recommendation made to us from the BEC for the 2% salary pool, it has been accepted by executive leadership and will be included in the upcoming budget.
Thank you, Susan. Just a quick comment on that. We continue to be committed to regular salary increases for faculty and staff. And there was a conversation that occurred earlier in the spring semester where BEC was considering perhaps not having a 2% or any salary increase. And I essentially said to Jordan Corinne that, well, that's not going to work, and sharpen your pencils and get back to it. Because as an institution, I've said this since I arrived, our staff and our faculty are our most important asset, and we are committed to regular salary increase pools. We must continue to do that work. Even if it's reallocating resources internally, we have to make sure every year we have the ability to reward performance of our faculty and staff. And so I'm proud of the work that the BEC did to come back with a recommendation that was good for our people. Thank you.
And then I just have one last slide. As you know, we do have a specially called meeting in June to approve the budget. So that's when we will do the hard work on the fiscal year 25 budget. We will have a detailed budget presentation and spend most of that meeting on the fiscal year 25 budget. And materials will be sent out to the regents well in advance of that meeting. So I'm happy to address any questions at this point. I'm sure the president or provost would be as well.
Any other questions or comments? Okay. If not, Mr. Chair, that concludes finance and budget.
Very good.